What is going on, podcast listeners? Neil here for another episode. I got my buddy Chris Schwab on. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you. Chris is hailing in from Japan. Where in Japan exactly are you?
So I'm in Yokohama, which is about 20 minutes train ride outside of Tokyo. So it's own city, but it is just very close to Tokyo. It's kind of an extension of it.
Very cool. And I'm going to give you guys a quick background on Chris because I think he's got such a cool story and sounds maybe familiar as well because he has the ideal remote local business. So Chris and I started both of our maid service businesses roughly around the same time, a few years ago, and his business is called ThinkMates. They're based over in the DC area, I believe, doing over 100K right now. And this company's based in DC. Chris lives in Japan. So he's been able to manage this remotely for years now, and he's doing a lot of cool stuff. So I'm really, really excited to have Chris on, talk shop, and hopefully provide a ton of value for you guys. So thanks so much for hopping on, Chris.
Cool. I'm just happy to be here and get to talk to the man again.
If Chris, tell us your background. Yeah, go ahead.
If people don't know, Neil, you were the inspiration for me to actually take it remote. So, go with your story, but... Well, I remember after I did the Grow My Cleaning Company podcast, Mike Campion mentioned a guy, Neil Park, to me. And I went, oh, wow, he's running it in a different country. I want to talk to this guy. It's possible. Wow. So I told him, we'll get to the origin story in a sec, but I just wanted to let you know that. Like, you were the one who showed me it was possible. So,
dude, that's incredible. I got the chills. I appreciate it, man. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So let's dive in. Like, let's go to your origin story. Where did you start? How did you even get involved in this business? What was your thought process when getting into it?
Sure. So going back to 2015, I was at a third year of university, and I did a study abroad program in South Korea. Mm-hmm. And my then girlfriend, now wife, Yuki, who's Japanese, her university did a study abroad program as well at the same university in South Korea. So we actually met and became quick friends there at that program. And of course, it's only a study abroad program, so it's short, and there was an end date to it. But neither of us wanted that relationship to end. It had evolved naturally from a friendship into a partnership, of course. Mm-hmm. And we decided that we're going to give this a go long distance, even though we were kind of entering a different stage of life as we leave university and so on. The problem was I was a psychology and computer science guy in university, mm-hmm. and so at that time... there wasn't many remote jobs available for psychologists.
When so was this?
This was 2015 is when I met her, and 2016 is when I graduated. So the summer before my final semester, I started to really think about options to get over to Japan, seeing as she already had a career. She's a flight attendant for a major airline here. She had a career that she was set on doing, whereas I was less set on doing a specific thing and more set on having a flexible career that would allow me to be with her. So gotcha. I was really brainstorming at that time what the options were. And to be frank, the only option for a young guy with no experience or network to call on at that time was to build a business, right?
Yep.
So I started looking at different business models on what could do this. And this was kind of, you know, e-commerce was definitely around. It's been around for 25, 30 years now in some form or another. But a lot of the e-commerce platforms were much more simple, and they weren't as, what would you say, the business model for building a successful e-commerce company wasn't as built out as it is these days. Yep. And so it seemed like a risky model to me, and I didn't know anything about it. So I was a little afraid to put my money where my mouth was. So I actually started doing freelance SEO writing first, which was really terrible, and I wouldn't recommend it. I wrote articles on vampire Botox for doctors. I think it's still floating around somewhere. But but anyway, to make vampire a long story Botox. Short, I had this very brief period of SEO writing where I earned about $700. And I took that $700 and I said, I'm going to start a business with this. I'm not going to do this. I hate this. This is terrible. I stumbled on a Reddit case study. Which if you know Neil and you've been listening to his podcast for a while, I'm sure he's mentioned it many times.
Oh, definitely.
This was the original how to build a cleaning business case study that became very famous on Reddit a few years ago. And we had
is it still active? I haven't been there in a while. Like, I don't know if the information just moved off of Reddit onto other platforms now. Is that even a thing still?
No, the subreddit's totally dead, actually. But to be honest, but people still talk about it in Facebook, and I always, it's important to me that I always give credit where it's due. So I always mention that this wasn't some original idea of mine. This was a path that I followed.
Yep.
So we'd both at slightly different times. I think maybe you started maybe a year or two before me. I had stumbled on this, and I thought, wow, this is a low cost business that I could start, and maybe I'll fuck it up because I've never built a business before, but why don't I try it? You know?
Yep.
And so I spent my $700 building a really basic, terrible website, and spending a couple $100 on Craigslist and Thumbtack for marketing, and found a couple teams and got my first couple customers. And as they say, the rest is history. But that's kind of the start of the business.
Gotcha. And your goal with doing that was one thing, was just to find side business so that way you don't have to get a job and therefore you could go be with your girlfriend. Is that correct?
That's right. Yes. Yes.
Gotcha. And so let's fast forward. So you're building the business. Are you doing it full time at the beginning?
No. I was doing class and exams and the business at the same time. But this was a really stressful period at the time, but I'm really grateful for it now. I was doing all those and juggling them and just juggling family commitments and all that stuff. But the business started to grow really quickly. So I think we went from zero to 20,000 a month in less than 90 days in recurring revenue. So it was a very quick start. And rather than being proud of it at the time, I was kind of like, oh God, what do I do? Like, I don't have enough teams. Like, teams are canceling on me. Customers aren't happy. You know, I was in this crazy period of just stress. Yep. Yeah. There's a guy in the cleaning industry. You might know him, Neil. His name is Derek Christian.
Yeah.
I had a call with him at about the same time I had a call with you. And he told me a term that I still remember today that I coach my students on. He called that kind of 15 to 30,000 a month mark, the cleaning valley of despair in our industry. It's when you're busy enough that you're wearing all the hats, but you're not profitable enough that you can afford to hire someone else yet, right? So you're just stuck in this zone of like, oh my God, everything is on me. And if I drop it, then I drop everything, you know?
Yeah.
And I was stuck in that very quickly. And so the Halloween of 2016, I made one big mistake and it really cost me a lot. I forgot to ask my teams if they were going to be available to clean on Halloween day. I didn't think that maybe they'd want to be with their families that day, right? I was just focused on sales and getting those customers happy. And on that Halloween, actually, they all, like half our teams canceled, and I had like maybe a dozen angry phone calls from people. So this was kind of the catalyst for me going, something's got to change. I've got to get help. I forget exactly when we talked, but you and Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, both took advantage of virtual assistants. And this was kind of the second catalyst for me to show how I could actually run the business without doing everything myself for a reasonable price and actually do it remotely in another country. So the book and yourself were that major change for me where I could actually feel like this is possible. And so I hired a VA shortly after Halloween and took a 1-week trip to Japan, and it worked perfectly. So I thought, okay,
very cool, man.
Test is done. This is possible. Anyway,
I
sorry.
I think with the power of, no, this is great, man. I do think with the power of remote team members and offshore talent now, the valley of despair exists. However, I feel like the number shifts depending on where you are in your journey. For example, like our franchises, I tell them as soon as they can, just hire a remote team member. Why? Because the big money comes later. Like, forget if you're not as profitable at the beginning. But if you get someone to pick up the phones, follow up with people, do your level one cleaning recruiting, it's just so much better. And it doesn't cost that much money. It's easier to get nowadays than it was 10 years ago. So yes. I always recommend to people, just the first investment you can make, hire some help, right? Try to ease that valley of despair a little bit to get to the point where you're able to run things and have a little bit more breathing room. So it's interesting you mentioned that. I definitely agree. It exists. I wonder where it exists in the framework now.
Good point. Yeah, it does change. I give similar advice. There's kind of two pathways I see that's very common for people in terms of hiring someone remotely early on. If someone has a full-time job or other income sources, if they're an investor, for example, I think it's good for them to hire someone basically from day one because they're able to delay that gratification. They don't need that profitable paycheck right away. They can build the business for 6 months or a year before they start paying themselves, right? If someone is a cleaner transitioning to a cleaning business owner, for example, or someone who money's a little bit more tight for, I do typically recommend they build a solid foundation that first 6 to 9 months, and they really grind away and learn how to do the job first, though, and then hire someone. Because I find typically, like as a VA agency owner, a lot of the smaller companies who come to us, they're not running their operation efficiently yet. And because of that, they really are burning their money, right? Like they're paying someone for 6 hours when they need them for an hour and a half in reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so there's a balance.
Yeah. And that it kind of depends who it is getting into it too, for sure. Chris, walk me through of when you fully moved to Japan and started running this business fully remotely. How soon into the business was that?
Sure. So I think I made the website in June, but I didn't launch it yet. I got our first booking in July 2016. Mm-hmm. I took a test month in November, in November to Japan. That worked well. And then I formally moved to Japan full time in the end of March 2016. So Japan full time for a year. And then there was about a 3 year period where I was half London and half Tokyo. So I went back and forth living between the two.
Why London?
I know I sound American, but I'm a British citizen. So
no way. Okay. You got this DC London connection over here. So DC, were you at school over there? Is that the only reason you were there?
Yeah. I went to university there.
Okay, cool.
My dad actually grew up there though, a long time ago. So there was a family connection there. But it, you know, I didn't even know that until I moved to DC and he mentioned, no, I grew up there.
Chris, this is more of a personal question. But was it a big decision for you to be like, you know what, I'm going to give up the Western world, or I'm going to give up normal UK or American life and go live in Japan? Like, walk me through that decision-making process for you.
That is a good question, man. How can I shorten this answer to 30 seconds?
Is your wife in the background being like, oh, what are you going to say?
She's looking at me like, you better not say the wrong thing.
Yeah, right.
No, she's looking after my dog right now, who's a wonderful dog, but very chaotic in the mornings. To answer your question, there's a couple things. To be honest, I think the age that I moved was important. I moved when I was just turning 23. And at that age, you're still kind of in explore and travel mode, and you're you're very adaptable to different environments. You're not as set in your ways, I think. And I'm not saying people in their 40s, 50s are, but it's easier to make those big life transitions before you have all those commitments, right? So I was mostly excited and fun to explore this culture that I wanted to explore anyway, actually. So it was a lot of fun for me. Since then, there've been a couple things I've noticed over the years that, you know, get to me or I notice are very big cultural differences, for example. But I'll give you a philosophical one if I can quickly.
For sure.
There's a great book by a psychologist, he's dead now, called Eric Fromm. It's a book called Escape to Freedom or Escape from Freedom. I'm forgetting which it's either to freedom or from freedom. And this is a book I've only read in the past year, but it really highlighted something important for me in the business journey. When I was building my business to get to my wife, I was building it to escape from my current situation to get over to her. Right. It was like a, my life was good in DC, actually. So it's not that I was escaping anything, but I was trying to get away from a situation that I didn't want to a situation that I wanted, right?
Right.
And once I got over there, I spent the next couple of years actually stagnating in my business because I didn't have a new goal to go towards yet. My goal was achieved, get to my wife and live in Japan. I achieved that. Yep. And because of that, there wasn't a higher goal that I was going for anymore. But anyways, this is a great book for people to read because it gave me the insight that one of the reasons that I was stagnating in my business is because I had escaped from something and I wasn't moving towards something anymore. And once I recognized this, I could start to work towards something meaningful again in business, which we can get into if we have time. If we don't, we don't. And my business has been great again. So anyway, I just wanted to share that book. It's less about culture shock and so on, which is what I think you were asking about. But it's a very interesting book, I think, for digital nomads specifically, because a lot of nomads that I see who want to build their business, it's not that they're doing something to go towards something fun. They're trying to escape a bad situation, or they're trying to escape something else in their life, right? Rather than building a beautiful life of freedom for themselves. And so I think it's a good book for digital nomads to read.
Yeah. Dude, so well said. I think most people who start a business are the same way, especially if you're starting a business to quit the 9-to-5. I call it the pain and pleasure, right? Like you're trying to get away from pain. The pain is I don't have freedom of my schedule. I don't have freedom of my financial security. I don't have X, Y, and Z freedom. Once you get rid of that, what are you moving towards? That's the hard part. And I'm the same as you, dude. I struggled for that after I left the 9-to-5. I traveled. And I was like, cool, what am I doing, really? And it's a weird problem to have. Like, it is a fortunate problem to have, but it is a very strange problem to have as well. So I feel you, dude. I feel like if I was going to guess, like 90% of business owners probably get into this is because they want to get away from some pain, right? That's their first foray into entrepreneurship. So it's cool that you mentioned that. So people recognize that that is probably going to come at some point, that decision in your head.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing. It's just an intermediary stage, right?
Yeah.
Don't make escaping something your end stage. Have a long-term thing that you're aiming for, right?
Yeah. Chris, walk me through the business growth. So at this stage in the journey, you've moved to Japan and you have this business, it's running well. What's the hardest, I'm going to ask you rapid fire questions, answer them whatever order you want. What's the hardest part about running your business? How did you actually grow if you're only relying on digital marketing? Like anything you could provide on how you grew this business completely from the other side of the world.
Sure. I'll give you two hard things. Mm-hmm. The first is just a practical day-to-day thing. Because of the time zone difference is so great between the US and Japan, it's 14 hours right now. So your 5 a.m. is my 7 p.m., for example. Mm. I have to work biphasically. So that many people can just work one chunk of the day and then they're done. I work a couple hours in the morning. I relax, work out, whatever during the day. And then I work again at night and have meetings quite late sometimes. So that is just difficult, you know, having a meeting at 6 a.m. and then another at 10 p.m. just crushes you mentally sometimes.
Yeah.
And there are ways around that. I've minimized that because my team is very good now. We meet, you know, once a week, basically. But there's calls that I do sometimes with other people who are very early on. That's just tough. Just the physical geographic difference can present some challenges around time and sleep. So that's a big one. And the other one is really staying emotionally and mentally invested in your business. So we both preach a remote model, and I think it's a beautiful model. But one of the things I notice is when people do achieve a degree of success in their business and they're able to travel with it more, they become imbalanced in favor of just the travel and the pleasure. They go from all pain and business building to like just all pleasure. And their business start to stagnate or slide. And this is something that I went through as well. And it's, you have to maintain a degree of discipline and awareness and focus on your goal, even once you're really enjoying your new life, right?
Yeah.
You have to be able to pull yourself back consistently and work on those things even then. You haven't finished, right? And your business is going to really suffer and your team is going to suffer if you become too uninvolved. So I'd say that's the other big thing, is when you're in a different country than your business, your mindset, your life is different. It can be very hard to pull yourself back into business mode sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely have felt that myself. So I think you're hitting on it. Chris, for people listening who want to get from like 0 to 50K, you did this probably 100% digitally because you actually were not in your location. What was your best marketing avenue for scaling your business when you first got started and also now?
Sure. I wouldn't recommend what I did at the start. It was great in 2016, not so great in 2023. Mm-hmm. But for me at the start, I had just a couple hundred bucks in marketing. So I needed to make it work, right? There was a pressure there to make it work. So I used paid sources. And the paid sources that I used were Thumbtack and Craigslist. Those were both really good for me at the start because I was able to take a marketing perspective on that, which I think a lot of small business owners at that time weren't able to do. I think that's changed. I think small business owners are extremely savvy now. And the competition is tough, but still you're able to work on it. At that time, Thumbtack was just a very simple lead platform. It wasn't as complex as it is now. But what I did was I didn't just send one message to someone. I created a messaging funnel for every situation. If they viewed my quote, there was a message that I sent. If they replied, there was another message. If they didn't reply, there was another message. If they chose a different provider, there was another message. So I created a comprehensive message funnel for Thumbtack and an alternative one for Craigslist and Yelp, where I was always reacting to the situation, following up with those customers. That won me a lot of jobs. I was also doing what others weren't able to or willing to do. I would accept Thumbtack leads at 9 p.m. at night or 11 p.m. at night or 3 in the morning.
First person pickup's going to win. That's pretty much it.
And there's sometimes you do have to do that early on. You know, I don't do that now. Yeah. It's not worth it to me now. But most businesses are open 9 to 5. And if you are willing to pick up the phone after business hours, you probably are going to get that customer. So we got a lot of customers that way just by me being willing to pick up the phone, really.
Yeah.
Most people get off work at 5 p.m., right? They need someone
to call you after.
Yeah.
Chris, what about now? What do you see working for you guys now?
Sure. How do I say it without a bunch of jargon? Marketing jargon. I have designed as I'm sure you've done too, this is kind of a natural stage in the marketing and sales process. I've designed an end-to-end marketing and sales system. I view marketing and sales as one long step, different steps in a long funnel. I don't view them as different independent things. I think marketing is early stage sales, right? And so what I've done is I have two different things that we do. We do traditional organic and paid marketing. That's SEO and AdWords and Facebook, all that good traditional marketing that brings in leads immediately. But we also have a fully automated funnel that we work on people with where they enter our website at different points. If you go to thinkmates.com, there's a lead capture form box on the site. These are very common now. Go High Level, ClickFunnels, and ActiveCampaign, they all have lead capture forms that you can use where people enter their information to get a quote. Once they enter their information, two things happen. They get taken to the booking page be given the quote. But the second thing is a whole automated email and text process that we built out over years. They're added to that list and they're starting to be marketed to. That's the automated aspect. We do that for seasonal campaigns. We do that for new leads. We do that for one-time bookings, and we do that for regular customers. Basically, the basic flow is someone comes in as a lead somehow. They're input into our system. That lead is run a lead campaign until they become a one-time customer. Once they become a one-time customer, a different campaign is activated to push them to become a regular. After that, a different campaign is activated to turn that regular into a referral where they're going to refer their friends and families, right? So there's a whole life cycle sequence that we've built out for every different stage of the customer process. We even have a client win back campaign that runs regularly as well for clients who cancel and no longer need us. So this is the bread and butter of what we do now, is having a marketing system on our back end that's running rather than just using someone else's platform.
Gotcha. I love it, man. And Chris, when you are running your business fully remote, 14-hour time difference, you're going to be reliant on a lot of remote team talent to actually make this work very early on. So I'm guessing you got very well systemized in this. Can you tell me a little bit more about Innova and that company that you built to pretty much support what you're doing as well?
Sure. Yeah. So Innova Local is my second business. I started this shortly after ThinkMades. I actually started about a week before I moved to Japan. When I was building ThinkMades, I was doing it publicly. I was doing case studies. Hey, I hit 10K a month. Hey, I hit 20K a month. And people were kind of following along, right? Like, hey, this is really cool. This young guy is doing this, blah, 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 whatever. Let's see what he's doing. And I also posted about my week-long trip to Japan using the VA that I hired, right? And a lot of business owners went, hey, that's really cool. Maybe that could work for me too. I haven't taken a vacation in 5 years. It'd be really nice if I could have a VA and do that. So I started getting a lot of questions about how'd you hire your VA? How'd you train them? Could you do that for me? At first I was like, no, like really, I just want to like go like check out some cool temples in Kyoto, you know, but enough people asked me that I thought, okay, I'm going to share a little bit about how to do this. So I started sharing how I did it, but people kept asking me for a done for you service. So I said, okay, I will start a VA agency for you and take a few people on as beta clients and we'll see if this works together, right?
Right.
And so I started this very, very bare bones VA agency. I actually started it with $0. I didn't even have a website or a domain name. I just used PayPal for invoices. Like it was just the most bare bones operation possible.
Yeah.
But I found a skill in myself in hiring, training and delegating to VAs. It's something I'm very good at. And so I started to teach others how to do that. but I also started to train VAs for them using our own team. And we slowly built out a team of cleaning business virtual assistants specifically for the industry, who are trained on common softwares, who know how to close sales, and who've often worked in cleaning companies before. So
gotcha.
What we basically do is two things. If their business is running inefficiently, we have a system specialist who will come in and will actually make their businesses run more efficiently, and then we'll pair them with a VA who can run their businesses for them. So that's kind of what we do.
Gotcha. So you guys will do VA placements into local service businesses who are fully trained, or you will help systemize your business first and then put that person into place?
Yes.
Very cool. And that's innovalocal.com, is that right?
Yes.
Awesome, man. And something you were telling me about before, which I didn't even know existed, the local business MBA program that you're starting.
Yes.
What is that? Like, yeah, who's that for? What is it?
Sure. The local business MBA is really an extension of the case studies that like me and Rohan and this kind of original cohort did way back in the day. It is a comprehensive, and I really mean comprehensive, man. it's overwhelming in size sometimes. It is an in-depth, comprehensive MBA-style course on building your own local business. So if you've ever seen like a Wharton School of Business or Harvard Business School, it's really close to that in nature. I've tried to design it using a lot of course designers who've designed courses for these universities and tried to format that into the MBA program. And so it's split into four different stages that walks owners through how to start their own business. So this is why local business, which one is good for me in my community, what can I expect the first few months, how to hire my first teams, how to hire my first customers, how to market and how to close sales. All of that beginner level business stuff is worked into the first stage of the program through the frame of a local business. Once people have actually started their own local business and it's running and functioning and they have their first customers, we then move them to the second stage of the program. This is the scaling stage where we actually show students how to scale up through various stages of their business. We call these growth points. That's 10K a month, 20K a month, 30K a month, 50K a month. We show you the common obstacles that you're going to face at different stages. Because the obstacles you face when you're 10,000 a month and when you're 50,000 a month in revenue are very different. They're just different choke points that you're going to plateau at. So we show you how to tackle the various challenges at each of the growth stages so that you're not stuck there for a very long period of time. Or if you are stuck, you'll learn how to get unstuck. We do this through comprehensive business health checks with the students. So we walk them through these different stages of actually functionally growing their business into something real. And once they've gotten busy, once they've gotten uncomfortable, once they've got this great foundation set up, that's when we take them to the third stage of the program, where we show them how to automate and systemize and efficiently run their business. And we put this as the third stage instead of the first stage, because we believe that you should actually find out what's working first and build a solid foundation. A lot of people are offering done-for-you business-in-a-box setup programs now, but the truth is marketing and sales changes very quickly, and the templates and strategies that you're going to use are going to be totally different from one year to the next. And so you actually need to get your hands dirty, and you need to grind out, and you need to find out what's working in your city, because it's not going to be what's working in a different city. That's one of the beauties of local businesses, is that some things will remain the same, but other things are hyper-local, and you're going to have to learn that. Yep. So we believe the first few months that you should actually get your hands dirty, find out what's working, and then when you know what's working in reality, then you can systemize and automate much of that to make it run efficiently. So this is what the third stage of the program is about. And the final stage is all about learning how to hire an office team or a VA, how to delegate, and how to finally actually get to a stage in your business where you can grow it if you want, but you can also take it remote like I have if you want, and you can travel the world. So it's really about hiring an office team and giving you flexibility as a business owner, as a person, to do what you want to do with your business at that point. That's kind of the end stage of the program. Anything beyond that is more advanced.
Gotcha. Very cool, man. Well, Chris, thanks so much for hopping on, dude. And I love stories like yours. You have a remote local business in cleaning, went from zero to $100,000 a month where you're living in Japan. Super badass, dude. I appreciate you hopping on. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Everywhere. If you go to localbusinessmba.com or innovalocal.com, you'll find my contact info there. You could also just search Chris Schwab on Facebook. You can probably find me just by searching that, or you can probably find me as a mutual friend of Neil's if you have Neil on there. Yep. Those are the best places to find me. I am on LinkedIn and so on, but I don't use those. Facebook is the main bread and butter of what I do.
Cool. And we'll put all of those links in the show notes as well. Chris, thanks so much for hopping on, dude.
Thanks so much.
Thanks again for listening, guys. There are two ways I could help you out. Number one is with May This Franchise. If you want to get into business but don't want to go at it alone, we have you covered with everything from A to Z. Check out madethisfranchise.com to start your own remote local business. The next is with the Remote Local Blueprint, which is a course I launched to teach you the foundations of starting your own remote local business in any niche. It's do-it-yourself at your own pace, and you can check that out at blueprint.beremotelocal.com.